not feeding back to us.
Right, I'm listening.
And they lost? And then all the car factories closing?
It's Tuesday, November the 4th, 2013. Calling to order the quarterly meeting for the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan. All board members are present. Okay, is there any public comments? Seeing, hearing none, there are no public comments. That means we're going to go straight to the quarterly report.
All right, everybody have a book? All right, happily, we hold on to gains. This is a nice, very nice close to the year. Just in brief introduction, I think everybody remembers since we last met, everyone thought that the Fed was going to start tapering. The market had actually even set up for that. And Fed did not take the free pass, if you will. They opted not to taper. And so we had some pretty sharp reversals in the market. Equities viewed it positively, and the bond market viewed it negatively. Also, during the period of time, we had a little show from Greece again. Which didn't really make it on the radar screen. We had resolution to our missile standoff, I guess, if you will. I'm not sure how to also put that.
With Syria.
With Syria. So that relieved the markets. And meanwhile, we continued to have good corporate earnings come in. And that resulted in a very nice, strong equity market rally to close out the year. And as we go through the books, you'll see fixed income, investment-grade fixed income, gave us a negative total return for the year. And, fortunately, this board worked pretty diligently and diversified assets away from the investment-grade fixed income. So the real estate performed very well for you. And the global bond portfolio, that medley of two different managers we have in there, performed pretty well for you, providing a nice offset to what otherwise would have been a negative portfolio. So asset allocation helped a lot. And we looked at Dalton. Dalton came back, had a nice strong comeback. So right. Our one active domestic equity manager performed well. And Manning & Napier on the international equity side, still lagging a little bit, but we're still constructive on them. But we'll take it through those numbers. So on page two, just to look at the hard numbers. And sorry, I'll just focus on the 1 year results since we're talking about our fiscal year. And if you look at the lower right-hand chart titled 1 year performance, all in, the S&P 500 in dark blue was up 19%. As you go down in capitalization all the way down to the small cap, the Russell 2000 was up 30%. Again, from an asset allocation structure standpoint, this program, you have a just under a 10% allocation to the small cap index fund, Russell 2000, so you were there, you captured this. If you looked at look above, from the international standpoint, international equities weren't quite as strong as domestic. The MSCI ACWI XUS, that's everything, both developed and emerging markets, was up 17. The developed country stock, the MSCI EFO, was up 24. So even though they didn't finish as strong, international equity gave a good positive contribution. And then they're just hopping down into the green. There's the results for the bonds. Using the Barclays U.S. aggregate as our proxy for how the bond market did, bonds lost us 1.7%. And again, up until very recently, we've been participating in the Vanguard Total Bond Market Index Fund. We've been riding it up. We wrote it down in line. So bonds did not contribute anything as far as U.S. investment grade to achieving that actuarial required rate of return. So the asset allocation decision here was pretty important in helping us get some extra additional return. So if you hop up to, let's go up to page 19. And apologize. Usually we're able to get these books done in time, so we can email a copy out for everybody on Friday. But we literally were got the statements late for some reason from your custodian. So they were literally putting it together Saturday and this morning. So this is hot off the press today. Usually we try to, you know, get it to you in advance so you can look at it before the meeting.
Yeah, and just on that note, we're going to be changing our meeting to 1 week later. That way,
be sure to have all the information.
I'm sorry?
That way you'd be sure to have all the information.
Yeah, it'll be easier for them to do, and it'll be easier for us. General and police typically have their meetings on Monday, and we're going to have ours on Tuesday. I think we've got to make sure that the conference room is available, but that's what we're looking at doing.
That's not a hard pass date yet, but...
Okay.
Pencil it in.
Next meeting.
And when we get it all figured out, if making sure that the room is available with the recording equipment and everything, then we will send out an email to everybody with the dates for the all of 2014.
Conceivably, though, that would make it the second Tuesday in February would be our next one. Right? Is it February?
The second... Yeah, like the 11th. Okay. Yeah, that way instead of the 3rd, it would be the 11th. That way it gives us a lot more time, gives everybody a lot more time to prepare, because the numbers just don't come in fast enough to get everything done.
Randy, while you're talking about meetings, is it mandatory that we have meetings in June, July, and August? Everyone's just scattered all over the place.
One, we have to have quarterly meetings. It's mandatory that we have quarterly meetings.
Yeah.
That's mandated by the state. We can have more if we want, but we can't have less.
Okay.
So on page 19 then, follow with me on the top line there. Obviously, fiscal year to date and 1 year are one and the same. And you know, happily, the plan earned 13.39%. And that was pretty much even to the passive policy benchmark. And on a peer group percentile basis, with that 33 there, the plan results, you finished in the top 33rd percentile of the other public funds out there across the country. Obviously, as we talked about before, there's a significant representation of Florida plans because there's so many in that database. So great absolute number there. Will work nicely in working against that actuarial required rate of return.
Okay, now, excuse me, Dave. Now, is that including Integrity's numbers or not?
We would not have Integrity funded in here.
Because they were only funded the last week of the month.
Yeah. So we're going to start with them on 10-1. So we start with their first full month.
Okay.
So that was we'll give them that transition, couple of weeks of transition.
Okay.
So we only report on full month period, so they'll kick in 10-1.
Okay. And another question on page 21, the realty. Did they both make zero or what?
Probably didn't get the information in.
That's what I'm thinking. So how's that going to affect the...
Both real estate funds, we're still waiting for quarterly statements to come from them. Just for a refresher, as everybody knows, the real estate funds are valued quarterly, and it's such a... It takes a while to go through that valuation process,
right.
So there's always a delay. So we can't... we don't even have estimates. Well, actually, for one of them, we have estimated returns.
Okay.
So the final book, and he should have put preliminary on here, but he's literally printing these off so I can make it up here on time.
Right.
And so when we reprint, we should see a marginally higher
return
because both real estate funds contributed somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.5% for the quarter. So what we did in this report, we just carried of the last month's value forward. That's why it's showing a zero, zero number there. So as soon as we have those numbers in, we'll rerun the reports, and that'll be the final. That'll be the final number submitted for submission. Not, shouldn't change that much, but should be marginally higher. So I'm going to work backwards since we started on page 21 with the real estate. So again, expect a good solid contribution from that, both managers when the numbers come in. Moving up page 20, bottom of page 20, the Templeton Global Bond Fund for the year gave us 3.5%. The PIMCO Diversified Income Fund gave us 0.34%. Note that the manager benchmarks were both negative. So as a result of that, the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund, they finished in the top 30th. And the Templeton Global Bond Fund finished in the top 4th. Go all the way over to the right, and since they were funded March 1st, the PIMCO Diversified Income Fund has handily outperformed by 3.01%, and the Templeton outperformed their benchmark by 1.9%. Keep moving up to the the domestic fixed income, and if you look at the year's return there, the domestic fixed income was down 2.38%. Again, as we talked about, it was indexed, so it went down in line with the market. So the positive returns were a nice offset, coming from the global bond managers. Integrity Core, again, we'll start reporting on them this quarter. The Inflation Protected Securities Index Fund, again, a very recent funding, that ended up 0.9 for the quarter. At least it was positive versus a bond market that was negative, so that little piece did its own little thing, as we would have hoped. Manning and Appears, I said, was up 20.9% for the year. Their benchmark was up 22, so they lagged by about a percent, but interestingly, they ended up finished about average 47th percentile in their peer group. Their cumulative number now, we've got a three-year working number. They're trailing by a little bit more, 58th percentile, now moving a little bit below average. And again, we're still constructive on Manning and would encourage patience with that strategy. Again, backing up on the page 19. The small cap portion of your portfolio was the star allocation there, up 30.15%. The two other index funds, we've got the Wells Fargo Large Cap Growth, which is against the Russell 1000 Growth Benchmark. That's going to be large in mid-stocks. That was up 18.28%. Value stocks obviously outperformed growth stocks for this period. The Wells Fargo Index Fund for value was up 21.9%.
Dave, I have a question. Typically, the index funds are supposed to mirror the index, and the small cap was a half a point off. Usually, they're closer than that, and then even more up. I guess not more, but similar to the large cap value. You're only talking 5 basis points. And large growth is 35 basis points and 50 basis points for the small cap. I know Vanguard has changed some of their, or they were in the process of changing who they're benchmarked against. Would that explain this, or have they gone through with all of the benchmark changes?
I was going to say that constitutes most of the difference there. So yes, they did change. And we're trying to move and capture and make that change when they change.
Okay.
But that did result in some difference in calculation there. So you correctly identified the issue.
Okay.
Yeah. Dalton Grenier, our all cap value manager, really our only active U.S. equity manager. Had a nice comeback, halfway. They were up 26.2% versus their broad Russell 3000 benchmark, which was up 22.6%. So for that, they finished about even, you know, average 49th percentile. Their three-year cumulative number, you know, we're still looking for them to close that gap, was up 13.4 versus 16 and 88th percentile. So from a policy standpoint, you know, the checklist in the back of the book, you know, they're in violation of those two performance benchmarks, which we've talked about at previous meetings. You know, we advocate hanging on.
Right.
And just as a general observation, as we've talked about, the last 3 to 4 years really have been, it's been more favorable to be in an index fund, as this plan is, than it has been to be actively managed. For the first time this quarter, we saw a noticeable shift in the number of active managers that were outperforming the index funds. And you can claim whatever reason you want, but it, I mean, with perfect 2020 hindsight, obviously the more recent market experience has been less macro panic oriented and has been focused more on individual company performance and earnings performance. So, you know, I think it's fair to suggest that the market has shifted its emphasis and is rewarding those managers who are buying stocks of companies that are outperforming their peers.
Right.
So hopefully that trend continues, and while we'll happily continue to stay in, you know, the vast majority of this program being indexed at low to no cost, you know, what little active management we have represented here, hopefully the environment will be more conducive to them giving us value added going forward. So it's an interesting observation for the quarter. So those were the major components. Again, very nice finish at the 13.39. We'll average in the real estate when we get those numbers. So let's take a look at the cash flow. And that's going to be on, let's do the full year, so that'll be on page 17. And if you follow with me on the bottom line there, and again, this will not include the real estate piece of it, so this will also be revised. The market value we opened up the year with was $35,929,259. Our contributions, which were member contributions, city contribution, state contribution, totaled $2,920,393. Distributions would be pensioner payouts, basically. $2,273,754. So as we always should do and like to do, usually in conjunction with the actuarial report, but certainly at year end, we want to take the pulse of the cash flow. So as you can see, because this plan is open, the plumbing is working and all flowing, and happily, you know, there's more coming in from a contribution standpoint, all the different areas, than there is being paid out. So we're actually growing assets, and we don't put this in our investment return, but we're actually, contributions are actually growing assets themselves. And the other good thing is we're not disrupting any of the investment program, having to sell off investments because we went into a negative cash flow situation. So it gives us a little more latitude to operate the investments. Investment management fees as paid by the custodian were $29,396. As everyone's aware, the mutual funds are all show performance net of the fees. So this is just a cash flow of any fees that were actually paid out by the custodian. Other line item expenses for administration or management otherwise of the plan, $14,186. Our investment earnings are broken down into income, about $750,000, $771,635.
What page are you on? 17.
Oh, I'm on page 17.
Okay.
I'm on page 17.
The bottom line.
About to go into the bottom line. So the income, $771,635. Just keep following over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the appreciation amount, $4,052,580. So about $5 million earned from investments goes into the asset bucket.
That's great.
Yeah, wish I could do that in my checking account. Total market value, $41,356,531 is the snapshot. And again, that will go up slightly when we get the final real estate valuation statements.
That's amazing.
Probably go up by, well, 10% of two, probably go up by 2/10, right? Because we get a 10% allocation to real estate roughly. So back of the envelope, that would probably be increased by 2/10 or so.
That's $771,000. That's total income from all investments. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
How much are we paying out?
It's right there, $29,396 for fees or for?
Oh, for benefits.
For benefits? One left over to that, $2,273.
Yeah, that would be that distribution line there.
Okay.
That's in benefits and then return of contributions.
So saying from a cash flow standpoint, your various sources of contributions total $2.9 million, and your pensioner distributions total $2.2 million, so we're happily net cash flow positive. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
So if you look over to the right, Larry, that's 771.
That income is after
income,
or is that the gross income, the interest earnings?
That's after. Let's see, the income we would report. I figure that's the best way to answer the question. We would treat the income as a gross.
Okay.
And then the fee is going to come out of the total return portion, the appreciation depreciation portion.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, when we're doing the math, we're calculating the total return, which would be income plus hopefully appreciation, and then netting out the fee from earned from both of those things. But looking at it, since this is a statement of cash flow, basically, the income shown here would be a gross.
So you don't know how much it cost us to earn $771 million, is that right? I mean $771,000, sorry. We earned $771,000 on the fund, but we don't know how much it cost us to pay all of our investment managers. Because that's in the appreciation depreciation. Is that what you just said?
That would be a separate that'd be a separate accounting. So we don't show that in the cash flow. We'd be happy to generate a separate schedule.
Well, the management fee, I mean, the management fees are not your manager fees. You know, so you don't see your manager fees on here at all, what it costs you for to have your, am I right? You guys understand?
Well, actually, the management fees here would represent the only...
Real estate, exactly right.
Well, no, that would be Dalton Grenier.
Right.
Okay, because they're the only... active asset manager here that we have individual bonds and stocks.
Manning and Napier's commingled accounts.
And Manning and Napier is a mutual fund as well. All these are institutional share class mutual funds.
Right.
So those fees are reported, the returns are net, so we don't have a cash flow line item for the fee, for the simple reason that, to really simplify it, the custodian is not paying a bill.
Their fees are taken out of the returns. We don't pay them.
Right.
We don't send them an actual check to them. So what we see is after earnings,
you see
after
the,
they
you
take
see
their
the
money
net.
And we see what ours is worth.
Yeah.
So we don't actually pay them. So it's not really a, you can't, well, you could, I guess, with a lot of math, but you can't really say, okay, it costs us X amount. We can do it on an individual basis and look at every individual company and say, in which we do, and say, you know, okay, it costs us this much.
0.65 you know, or 0.25
right.
or whatever, you know
right.
that. But just to look at a
yeah.
recap
oh, yeah.
on this report, you can't tell how much it you paid those managers. It looks like, wow, we earned $771,000. Well, we really didn't because we had to pay those managers. Is that, am I looking at it wrong?
Well actually, I think you'd have to say that you earned $4,820,000. What? Do my math right. I mean, you earned, I think you would have to say that you earned right around $5 million total. And then say, okay, what were the fees that we paid to earn that $5 million as opposed to what were the fees we paid to earn just the income?
Basically, those two numbers added up is what the total portfolio earned, and then that is net of fees.
Yeah, but the appreciation is not a cash, I mean, it's from cash flow, but okay, never mind, okay.
But I mean, we're paying a fee for appreciation and income.
I'm sorry, I'm confused on something. I just heard you say that that was net of fees, but I heard you say a few moments before that that this would not be net of fees.
He was adding the $4 million and the $771,000 on your right hand, your accumulated depreciation, depreciation.
Right.
Column, that's where your fees are, is in that column. So if you add up the $4 million and the $771,000, that takes out your fees. That's what he was saying just a moment ago. The guy, I don't know your name, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
You don't want me to know your name.
I think of interest to me is if you take this income fee of $771,000 and a contribution fee of $2,920,000, you come up with $3,692,028, and after taking out what we paid out, we still got $1,418,274.
But see, I think when you're saying that, which is right, I think we're all missing the fact that we did pay out your managers, all your investment managers missing in that $1.4 million number, because it's showing in your accumulating appreciation of your assets.
Yeah, but I hear what you're asking.
But maybe you guys are comfortable with the way he's doing it.
The thing is, whatever we pay them won't come out of this. It's already gone. So it's not going to affect these numbers here. Mm-hmm. So these numbers will stay the same, even if we calculated how much we paid them. These numbers would still be identical.
Right. Like say your bank account pays you 2%.
Right.
Well, they're making money above that, but you never see it. So you don't pay them what it costs them to keep your bank account, keep your savings account. You just get your 2%. So you don't actually pay, and this is just what our bills. This is just the money we have coming in, the bills we pay.
Well,
we don't specifically go here, XYZ Management Company, mutual fund company, here your money, because they already took their cut before we got our results.
Well, I wouldn't have a problem with that if your income would show 2%, but your income isn't showing 2%. Your income is adding those fees back on and showing that's how much you earned when you really didn't.
Well,
you said it was gross. You didn't say it was net of fees, right? Anyway, you guys are comfortable.
No,
go ahead.
No, wait. This is opening up something I need to hear more about. I don't think everyone's on the same page.
I think what might be helpful and what we can put together and forward to the board. It's difficult when you have mutual funds that everything's net after the fee,
mm-hmm.
and when you have separately managed accounts where there's actually a bill to be paid. So that bill to be paid shows up in the statement of cash flow. All this is a statement of cash
flow.
Right,
right.
Right? The very top line, what is the top line? Where we talk about percentage returns on page 19.
Sure, 13%.
Right, if you go down to the second line there, the total fund, the net line,
mm-hmm.
okay, that's what was earned net of all the fees.
Okay.
So that's what the state requires that we legally report. That's the absolute bottom line. So then to determine what those fees actually were, since some of them are paid and most of them are in mutual funds, what we can do, and I think we did this last year, we can construct a fee table showing you what the expense ratio of this plan is, and since the vast majority of the assets are in index funds, the cost of this managing this plan is very low, because you got bank institutional share class Vanguard index funds that you're paying 7-8 basis points for, and then the Vanguard total bond market fund, we're paying a little bit higher. I think that's at 12 basis points. And so the only mandates in here that have non-index fees that would creep up, the fees would be Dalton Grenier, and they're at
75 basis
points. Yeah, 75 basis points. And your two real estate funds, which are obviously higher fee strategies, they're at a little over 1%. And then the other two active funds are the two global bond funds, and those are around 47 basis points or so. So what we do is put together a table, show the weighted fee that's paid, and then you can get right down and see what the expense ratio is.
Well, I'd like to see what they came out for 401ks. a total cost of having the plan.
Total cost of what?
Total cost of having the plan. Everything. All of it.
Yeah, now when your actuary does the valuation, we can pull from the actuarial report the total cost. And that total cost would include the administration, all investment-related fees, and then those would get rolled in along with your investment management fees, and those would all get rolled into the expense ratio.
Well, the actuary will do that. He's getting, Alicia's trying to get him all the numbers by November the 15th. And then he will be here, you know, either at our February meeting or our May meeting to present the actuarial report.
And I'm not the expert on the report. I would just think, and on your income, you should put a footnote that says, this is gross income, does not include management fees. Because for somebody looking at this page, they think, wow, we don't pay anybody for anything.
Yeah, but the fee wouldn't come out of just income. You know, it would be coming out of both income and appreciation and depreciation.
But if I'm going to match up the income that I received, the cash I received into this fund, it's not gross, it's net. Because all they paid me was the net fees. They didn't pay me the gross fees. So you're not showing. Anyway, never mind. You guys are fine with this, so I'll just be my little accountant.
Well, you know, it, hope you take comfort. I mean, we're following AMER standard, the industry yeah. standard for calculating
sure.
cash flow and presenting investment returns. So I understand where you're coming from. So that's why I'm suggesting, as we did last year, it would probably be helpful to put together a fee schedule table, and then what all of the fees are that you're paying added up, what that expense ratio is. Yeah. So, again, excellent year, $5 million in the bucket. This will help close that funding gap a little bit, and actually probably quite a bit, and make the funding ratios look a whole lot better. And we'll see what the actuary calculates on a rolling basis. And I think, Randy, I can't remember, we're on a 5-year or 4 years.
Five.
So
Randy doesn't do the
earnings. Only, so we're reinvesting them. Is that individually decided upon monthly, or how do you do that?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of the question.
The earnings.
Right.
How do you reinvest them? Do you reinvest them monthly or what?
No, they're automatically. They automatically go back into the same fund, and then every once in a while at the quarterly meetings, we'll look at our asset allocation, where we have everything, and then we'll look at our cash and compare the two.
Automatic reinvestment, okay.
And yeah, I mean, as far as the managers go, but then the board looks at our allocation compared to our actual money on a quarterly basis, and sometimes, more often than that, and then we reallocate, and we'll get to that, as we get on in the report, if we do need to do any rebalancing.
Okay. And then from on page 23, just going back to the actuary, so the fiscal year-to-date number, obviously that's 2013, so if you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 back, what the actuary is dropping off this year is the 2008.
Yeah, 19.03, negative 19.03.
Yeah, and that loss has already been calculated and factored into your liability, and obviously that payment for that performance gap has been amortized, and we're trying to close that gap to the extent we can with investments. So that drops off.
And then next year, that next one will drop off, so we should be in much better shape after next year.
Yeah, so if we just earn a regular expected rate of return next year, I mean, the projection for improved funding,
right,
just coming from investments is it's on a very positive trajectory. So those are the high points. So for me, for follow-up, as soon as we get the real estate numbers, we'll redo the report, send it right out for electronic file, and we'll also put together the fee schedule, showing the fee table, all in mutual funds and separate accounts, to show you what the weighted average expense ratio is. So we know what it costs to get both the income and appreciation combined for the investment management fees.
Okay.
And I'd rather not wait till the next meeting. Why don't I get that out?
Okay.
That would be helpful.
We'll mail that out.
Dave, can you look at our asset allocation and see if we're in need of rebalancing?
Yeah, so let's talk.
Or do we want to wait? I mean, we can just look at it now, and then when you do the other stuff, then maybe send me something with the...
Yeah, if you go to page 12, that's, I think, in my opinion, that's the easiest way to look at it. The allocation as it currently stands, we're about 2.8% over in our domestic equity portfolio versus the target. And in bonds, we're about 3.5% under. Real estate, we've got a little more room. We could put some money to work. And
that's only if they'll take it, though, right? That's only if they do a capital call.
Yeah. And the receipts and disbursements, again, we'd want to double check on any pending payouts on that. But, you know, that's got a balance of 792, which, you know, we could put to work here. So as far as a rebalancing, any excess cash in the receipts and disbursements by default is going to go to the investment grade bond portfolio, and we'd suggest letting the equities run. Again, just to remind everyone, we set the investment policy statement up so that we've got a target allocation, which is shown at the far right portion of page 12 in the table there. And we have 5% rebalancing band, so we've got a rule that says if domestic equities exceed 50%, that forces automatically have to rebalance and go back to the policy target. So we're within the bands, which shouldn't require any rebalancing at this time.
Okay.
So we'll double check on the R&D balances with the custodian, make sure, you know, because we've got to leave enough working cash there. And then those excess monies would be sent to the integrity bond portfolio to rebalance it.
Okay. Any other questions on the quarterly report?
I guess I have one. On page 10, it says our cash equivalent is almost $4 million, which is 9.5%. What's the difference between that and page 12, where it says our cash is at $500,000? I don't understand the difference.
Okay, the cash equivalents, what that does is it goes in, and that is actually adding the cash. Let's see, that's pulling up all of the cash. So if any of the managers, for example, in this case it would be Dalton Grenier, has cash,
okay,
it's going across all of the accounts and adding up all of the cash.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily all in the R&D account,
because
right, that's only going to show R&D cash. This would be cash that might be held in all of the different accounts. So in this case, it's likely to be Dalton Grenier.
So that's not money that we could be investing that we're not?
No, that's been...
Because that's our only active manager. So they buy stocks and, you know, they have a sell point and a buy point and all that stuff. And when a stock, for whatever reason, they need to sell it,
okay,
it's made how much they thought it was going to make, and they think the projections are going to go down, so they sell all that stock. They keep it in a cash account until they can find something else to buy.
Yeah.
DGHM, Dalton Grenier, is the only ones that is actively managed.
Okay.
The other ones are all commingled accounts or mutual funds, so they don't actually have cash. And I guess they do, but it's not what we get, the final numbers, it doesn't include the cash. The only ones are our active managers, and they're our only true active manager with a separate account. Now, is Integrity going to have?
Yeah, no, Integrity is going to have a separate account. So
now we just hired this fixed income manager, and they will be doing the same. They will have some in cash because it's an active fixed income manager, but all the rest of ours are if they're not an index fund, they're in a commingled or mutual fund to where they don't separate everything out.
Right, got it. Thank you. Does that number have any, I hate to say meaning because that's probably not a fair way to ask the question, but does that number mean anything to us? I mean, whether it's a high number, low number, a different number, does it?
I think it's a good question. It's a good question.
I'm just curious what that, you know, when they say, okay, you know, because they, you know, you guys took the effort to put it in the book, what does it actually mean to us?
Yeah, I mean, it means that Dalton has probably moved, which they have, to a little bit more defensive, short-term outlook. And to Randy's point, they may be waiting for some sort of market pullback to put their next best idea into the portfolio and put that cash to work. So that's a little bit higher than normal.
That's how much money's not made. That's how much money's not getting a return for us right now. Yes. Basically, is what that means. Like to me,
other than it could also mean the opposite. You know, if the markets are going down and you're in cash, it's that much you're saving.
It was the best. It's, that money's not in play. Is what I'm saying. Plus or minus, it's not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Correct.
It's money. It's not an investment. It's not an equity.
But also, we have in our investment policy and guidelines, they're only allowed to have X amount of money in cash. They can't. Well, it's all a risk and a gamble somewhat, but they can only go so much in cash. There's a cap on how much cash they can have.
Right.
And there's a, you know, we have other criteria that they must follow as they're managing our money.
Right. So, I mean, all good,
yeah, just
good questions
me.
To be asking. Yeah, definitely. So any other questions on the report? We'll go back, get our homework done, and it's all right. We'll send over the package when the report's complete. We'll include the fee schedule on that, the investment management fee schedule on that.
Will that be by manager?
Sure.
How's that portrayed? Is that by manager?
Yeah, we'll do a. We'll basically take page 11. And what we'll be doing is saying, okay, Integrity Core has $8.2 million, which represents 19.9% of the total portfolio. So we're going to take that 19.9%. We're just going to do a weighted average here. So we're going to say 19.9% times the 25 basis point fee is X, and we'll do that for every line item, and then add everything up, and we'll have the weighted, pretty accurate, well, totally accurate, weighted average fee that the plan is paying.
Dave, I have a question. The global allocation fund is dramatically affected by the exchange rate of the euro to the dollar.
Yes.
Currently it's 135. It's been that way for years. I remember when it originally came out, it was 80 cents. How is that determined? Who determines it? And why in the Sam Hill is it still 135? You would think with all the problems they're having, like overall Europe's got a 12% unemployment ratio. That's unbelievable. Spain has got people under 25 at 60%. I mean, and yet their euro dollar is still 135.
Yeah, I'm in your camp. The level of the euro defies investment logic or economic logic.
Isn't that a signal that we should be paying attention to?
Well, I would argue we should have paid attention to it and done something about it when, you know it was as high as 157, and then has devalued. I mean, that's a pretty significant devaluation, but looking cross-border at the Eurozone versus the U.S., okay, so what... Then we go down the list of drivers that impact currencies. So number one would be the absolute level of interest rates and the perceived direction of interest rates. So for that reason, the U.S. interest rates are painfully low, and the expectation is that interest rates should rise. So with that in mind, the dollar should appreciate relative to the euro. I think the euro zone is in the opposite completely to your point. I think the expectation is that rates would continue to decline. While the U.S. comes out, euro may be bouncing along the bottom, but it's more likely that their rates go down
and our rates go up, so that parity, if you will, would suggest a weaker euro. Then you're looking at and perceived inflation rates, right, between the two countries. If you're going to invest in a currency, you want a lower inflation. So again, I call it a draw, I guess. Although the Eurozone is more likely to be deflationary, arguably. So that would argue maybe in that case for a lower euro. And then we go out and look at the supply-demand for the currency. And as you look across your global bond manager portfolios and almost every other portfolio, everyone expected the euro to go down. So from a supply-demand standpoint, everybody's already priced in and put a short on the euro. So you don't have those billions of dollars going in to buy it. Everybody's shorted. So there's no one left to short, I guess. So well, it won't go down anymore.
What's going on is, an example is the villages. I have a friend that's a real estate operator down there. He said, you cannot believe the Germans and the French and
these people down there,
they're buying houses at, in effect, a 35% discount because of the difference in value of our currency.
Right.
And I don't mean one or two, I mean hundreds of them.
Same thing.
I mean, back in the day, pre-Eurozone, I remember galvaning across Europe. Like, oh, this is great. You know, the currency exchange was awesome. Now it's our turn.
Before the Euro, you had every time you drove, 300 miles, you had to get a different kind of mile. Oh, we're not in Switzerland. We got to get rid of our Swiss francs and get our German Deutschmarks, and then we're going into France. We got to get our French francs, and it was a nightmare.
With regard to the value of the euro, would one explanation that it's at 1.35 now be that the condition of their credit markets is significantly different than ours? For example, their credit markets are much more stable than ours in the stronger European countries of the Netherlands, Germany, France, and the UK. But the UK is not on the euro. But that might be one explanation.
Yeah, I think that would definitely be on the list. And if you look at the banking system, maybe to your point, if you look at the banking system of the Eurozone, all of their debt is essentially owned by the government. So you're looking at the underlying credit, sovereign credit, basically, of Germany or France or whoever. And there's a lot more confidence placed in that, whereas, the banking system in the U.S., it's all privately held debt. The government, well, to the extent that we bail the banks out, but...
Yeah. And pension funds, for example, in Europe, usually have a mandated funded ratio. And if the funded ratio falls below that, there are automatic adjustments that occur in wage rates, for example. So that might be another reason why the euro is still stronger than the dollar.
The place that's really doing it is Germany's propping up the whole thing.
Yeah, that's a big issue. And then related to that, I mean, we can keep going down the list, but related to that would be there's a general expectation that, looking at the deficits of all the countries, lining them all up on the table, there's a serious expectation that the U.S. is going to continue to flood the market with U.S. treasuries to pay the interest on the debt that we have, let alone pay the new and continuously ballooning debt. So that has a devaluing effect on the currency, whereas the Eurozone, economically it's not looking so good. There are enough currently productive countries like Germany so that the debt issuance isn't expected to be as big. So, that's certainly another thing that's weighing the U.S. dollar down.
Yeah. The same thing happens in the United States. You have states that are struggling, you have states that are doing well, and it's the U.S. dollar.
Right.
The same thing basically happens here, just, with a slightly mildly different system. You have countries over there that are doing, they're doing well. You have countries that are going... they're not doing well, but on average, you've got this.
Right.
And that's why, you look at an individual company, you go, holy smokes, why not? Well, then you look at another country, and they're not benefiting from that. But I'm in your camp. I mean, the value of the euro defies, I mean, it defies gravity.
The only good thing, it makes our goods more attractive to them, and theirs less attractive to us because of the exchange rate.
That's a good thing.
You think that's bad, go to China.
Yep.
And try to exchange some dollars for some yen. They hit you with all kind of fees, even using a credit card.
Is it the yen?
No, it's not the yen. That's Japan.
Not the yen.
Well, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know what it is either, but it's not.
But yeah, there's a, there's definitely a demand function there, I think it worked. I'm not sure anybody really knows the answer. You go down the list and try and suppose what has the greatest impact on the valuation, but yeah, it remains high.
And then we turn around and give $1.5 billion to Pakistan. Unbelievable.
So our solution is the Templeton Global Bond Fund, which happily has been short the euro currency, since that is a very active currency fund. And fortunately, they've been short the euro since since the highs in the currency. So they picked up nice appreciation from their currency plays, and they've been long the currencies of the Baltic countries.
Do you ever
which have
deal in futures at all with this plan?
Is it what?
Do you ever deal in futures with this plan?
Directly, no. The PIMCO Fund and the Templeton Global Bond Fund obviously would be dealing in currency futures within the fund. Nothing direct, though, for us. I'll leave that to the experts in the fund.
My next door neighbor, that's all he buys, the futures. Unbelievable. Much to his chagrin.
Okay, how many of your plans are in emerging markets?
Pretty much everybody. I mean, you're getting exposure through the Manning
and Napier. Do you think that's sufficient?
So most of the managers that we've recommended to clients, kind of similar to our all cap, we want to find a manager that will efficiently manage both, and they'll decide when to overweight or underweight emerging versus develop. So Manning and Napier is doing that, and pretty much all of the vast majority, I should say, of the international equity managers we're working with, we brought on because they take care of that.
How do you all write these people that we do business with, these companies? Do you sit down at a board table and discuss their performance, or how do you do that?
Oh, yeah. We've got, just quickly starting from the top, our research team. We'll go in first. We'll do some quant screens, looking for mathematically as best we can. We'll be looking for performance consistency, risk management. Running all the numbers we can to try and get a good story to look at.
And a lot of them fall out in that process. The ones that don't meet that criteria will fall out in that process. And then when you get down to the bottom, the only ones that are left are the ones that you go to and do due
diligence. Yeah, and then we've got like 100 question due diligence questionnaire we send. This is all preliminary. And then based on those responses, then half go away. Then our research team will do some phone interviews, and if that makes it to the next step, then they'll go visit the site.
Usually you ever look at price earnings ratios and stuff like that? Or?
Well, for that, if it's, they'll look to see that the manager is applying how they treat price earnings ratio consistently. So we'll look at each of the metrics, but we're making sure that if manager XYZ says they buy high PE stocks, all we're doing is going back and checking their holdings and confirming that, they buy high PE stocks.
Good.
And then, we meet on a quarterly basis with the investment policy committee, and we go over all of the managers that Bogdan recommends, and we discuss any exceptions or
and
issues.
And I imagine certain ones fall out, and then other ones come in.
Yeah, and then at that time, because we're always open, so that all gets reviewed, formally on a committee level, once a quarter. So there's several layers going there.
we don't get them all, but hopefully we can get most of the correct decisions on the manager call.
Buy some Netflix next time.
I think we have.
No, I don't. No? I don't know if we have or not. Some of our managers might, but the Russell 3000, it's in there, and you probably saw it under the Russell 3000. Okay, getting on to the next item. Minutes and accounts payable. I passed them around. Is everybody?
Yes.
Okay, at this time I would like to entertain a motion to accept the accounts payable.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, motion by Estrada, second by Jim Williams. If there is no opposition to a unanimous approval, seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. At this point, I would like to entertain a motion to accept the minutes as printed and as sent out in email.
So moved.
Motion by Jim Williams.
Second.
Second by Larry Fagan. Discussion? No discussion. There's no opposition to a unanimous approval. Seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. Next item on the agenda. Justin, you might have a seat at the table. Discussion of fifth member. Justin Hardy is he's a financial planner.
Yeah.
Financial advisor, financial representative.
And he's got an extensive knowledge of finance, of stocks, on bonds, and you should tell us a little bit about yourself and your history and your background.
I've been in the financial services business for about 7 years now. Very knowledgeable in the background of, you know, how markets work, what, you know, what areas to be in, to get out of, and situation. I think that, you know, with the knowledge, it's, you know, understanding, you know, reading, picking up a book, and, you know, understanding what all of these numbers mean, I think is a good thing to have, to be able to make sure that, you know, you are in the correct funds, in the right areas.
What about education? Have you been?
Education, I graduated from the University of Florida with a bachelor's degree in business administration, and then I have my Series 7 license, which I can sell stocks and bonds and everything, Series 63 insurance licenses, things like that.
And you work, where do you work?
I work at Nature Coast Financial Services.
Yeah.
Nature Coast Financial Services, we're affiliated with Drummond Community Bank over in Levy County.
And how did you come to us?
I found him. I asked some people because we've been missing our fifth member since Fred's unfortunate passing, and I wanted somebody with financial background, you know, somebody that understands stocks, somebody that understands the market, somebody that understands, you know, that could be an asset to our plan. I mean, Fred was good, but he was a retired New York City firefighter, and he ran the fire college, but he wasn't as up on financial markets. And we all know that the more money that this fund can make, the better it is for the board, the better it is for the city, the better it is for the participants of this plan. The more money we can, the higher returns we can get, the less pressure there is going to be on the sponsor for doing all of that. And I just want somebody with a good financial background that's going to, and I think Justin will do good for the board and will be a benefit to the board going forward, and we need to fill that fifth position.
Do you have any advanced degrees in CHFC or CFP?
No, sir. No, sir, not yet. Just basically with how my life is.
That's your recommendation.
It's on the agenda to do. We've had children and working and getting. My wife's a CPA and getting her career going. That just hasn't been able to do that yet.
Do you have a resume that we can? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Larry.
No, that's it. It's just very, very good courses.
Yep. Yes, sir. That is on the agenda to get done. It just has not happened yet. I did bring.
Thank you.
Yep. Anybody else?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Forgive me, but don't you have to be a resident of the city of Ocala?
No, not to be the fifth member.
Hmm. And I am a resident of Marion County.
Right.
You just have to be a resident of the county. You don't have to be a resident of the city. The two city appointees have to be residents, but the fifth member does not.
I couldn't remember.
Fred lived in Dunellen.
Yeah, I couldn't remember.
But you could spell Ocala, right?
The majority of the time.
And again, you know, he serves at our pleasure, you know, so that he's the fifth member that's appointed by us for.
Well, I'd like to nominate him as a fifth board member.
Okay, a nomination by Larry. Do I hear a second? Second by Jim Williams. Any more discussion?
I don't know you, and I'm sure you're a fine individual with a great background. It's just that it would have been helpful to have the resume before today's meeting. I would have liked to have had an opportunity to formulate some questions.
Okay.
To get to know you a little better.
Again, he serves at our pleasure. If at any time we're not happy, you know, he can...
Do we have to do this today?
It'd be better if we haven't had...
We can nominate him and vote on him later. Or do a voice vote over the phone or something.
How long have we been out of fifth member?
A year.
Yeah, it's been a solid year.
And then Larry, when you were out, you know, we had to have us three. You know, if us three weren't here, we didn't have a quorum.
Me and Streeter got really good at motioning and second to come up. I mean, dude, it was like clockwork. You know, we just got it done. But probably shouldn't keep it to that. I mean, because we were taking turns last minute. It was cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that if I I'm almost sure that I would agree with your participation on the board. It's just that I would like to have an opportunity to speak with you a little further rather than just rubber stamp within a 5-minute, you know, period of time. And that's the way I like to operate. So if you don't mind, can we nominate today and can we vote at a later time?
Again, I would just soon get it over with, and then if we don't like it, then we can, you know, like I said, he serves at our pleasure.
That's difficult. That's not fair. That's not fair. I really would have liked to have had this in advance, and because the city appointees have had to submit their information, including a statement of interest. And why they want to serve on the board in order to qualify for nomination. And I'd like to have that same information from Justin, a statement of interest, and why he thinks he's qualified to serve and what he hopes to achieve, in the same manner that Larry and I did.
Did we ever have a second to the motion?
Yes.
Yeah,
what's up for discussion?
Put up for vote.
Question.
Huh?
Question, that means call to vote.
Okay. All right. Vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Motion carries with a 3-4 vote. Myself, Jim Williams, and Larry vote in favor, and three to vote in opposition.
Both of them.
Justin, you can't do anything at this meeting. The City Council will appoint you as a ministerial duty. They will put you on as fifth member, and then at our next meeting, you'll be a full member, and you'll be able to vote and participate and everything.
Okay.
The initiation ceremony is similar to crossing the equator on a sailing ship, by the way.
You know, I just learned about that from my father a couple weeks ago. He told me about that.
Okay, next on the agenda is the administrative agreement. Diane, can you enlighten the board on what's going on this?
At the General Employees Pension Meeting, which happened after your meeting last quarter, the General Employees Pension brought forward giving Alicia a raise,
right.
And they wanted to give her a 2 to 6% increase. So they put it back in my hands so that I could go forward and find out if she was eligible for a 2 to 6% increase. I did my evaluation and I did recommend a 6% increase, but the budget process had already been down the road. And so the city manager felt like it was better for me to put it in next year's budget process. Obviously, if I'd known that, I mean, the day I walked in, I should have done something. We should have presented it to the boards. So both of the other boards, when their agreement got adopted by the city council, it has a statement at the bottom that the board approved Alicia to get a 2 to 6% increase. I think that if you guys agree, it would be nice if you'd go ahead and approve that 2 to 6% increase based on my discretion. But I will, it won't happen in the contract you're signing today because city manager already denied it. Alicia, because she gets benefits from the city, is an employee of the city. So although the boards want to do this for Alicia, it doesn't work that way because she's getting the same benefits that all city employees. It just so happens that her salary is being paid by the boards.
Okay, so okay. Her salary, in other words, is not in the budget.
Her salary, that the 2 to 6% increase is not in this budget we're operating under right today, but I will go through the process during the next budget cycle and I will put it in there if you all ask for that today.
Okay, but here's my question.
Okay.
The board pays her, correct?
Yes.
Well, the not board the city. So it's not the city. It's not coming out of the city's budgeted money to pay her. It's coming out of the board's money to pay her. So it's not in the budget. Her salary increase is not even in the budget.
Well, here's the way, you know, it's kind of a, she's two people. She works for the city and the board reimburses her salary.
Right.
Really. So if something would happen and the board would not reimburse her salary, the city would have to determine whether we were going to continue to, you know what I'm saying? So because she gets the benefits of all city employees, we have to, her increases have to go along with the city.
Are those benefits paid for by the city, or is those benefits a piece of what comes out of?
Yes, 100% of her salary is paid by all of the boards. That is true. That is very true.
All right. I think there's going to be some ongoing discussion with the other boards on this as well. So at this point, I would like to go ahead and entertain a motion to go ahead and get Alicia.
I have one question.
Okay.
You said you advertised it as a 2 to 6%, but you have already said that it is going to be a 6%?
Actually, what I'm going to do is I did recommend, the board gave me the authority to do what I thought was in the best interest of my employees. So I requested a 6% increase is what I did.
What is she currently earning, please?
Like 46,000. I believe that's the number, 46,000.
Okay, who has to say yes to that?
The city manager does. Now you all are welcome to write a letter to him supporting it as well, and now I will put it in next year's budget.
That's a $2,760 pay raise.
Yes, plus benefits would go up as well. So.
What's the basis for the increase?
That there was two reasons they wanted to do the increase. One was that she had gotten her certifications. Well, the city no longer does certification increases. So we don't, just because you've earned more certifications, now you and the fire department may have that, where you get certain levels, you get your increases, but the general employees don't have that.
Did they have it at one point?
They did.
So she was told if she gets all these certifications that she would...
It was many years ago, I believe, but still, they did have it. You're right. She was told. I have a whole documentation.
And I don't have a problem, but if you tell somebody, get this certification, that, and that, and you know, there will be a reward at the end, then you don't have them get this, four-fifths of the thing, and then all of a sudden say,
so what I did,
we changed our mind.
Right.
Not that, you know, I'm just...
You're just saying.
Yeah,
you're right.
I'm just saying.
You're exactly right. So now you've got, so the 2% then was, okay, so if they're not doing certifications anymore, I can't do the 2%. So what I did was I reviewed her pay grade, and I went to HR and I said, what pay grade should she be on? So they came back with three pay grades higher than what she's on. Well, to me, that was justification to get her into another pay grade, which is a 6% increase. To when you promote somebody, because that's, you're not really promoting her with a job title, you're promoting her with a pay grade increase of where she should just, and she was like under the minimum, which has been a standard that the city has operated under, from what I understand. You know, I've only been here 6 months as of today. So anyway, I think that next budget year I still want to go through with the 6% request for her to get an increase.
When was the last time she got a raise?
2010, I believe it was 2010. I didn't bring my paperwork with me.
Okay, she got a raise 3 years ago.
And we're not voting for the raise right now.
I'm just kind of trying to put it all together. And then you said she'll get the pay increase as well as other benefit.
The other benefit increase is when you give somebody a $2,000 pay increase, you've got FICA, you've got Social Security. You got pension, you got different things that go on top of that. So it's not just flat $2,000 is all I was
it's
trying
like
to say.
Like the letter they send us every year.
Well, one tells me I make like $190,000. Yeah, that's true. Well, no, I'm just curious because it sounds like, I mean, she's not getting, it's not like she's changing employee levels where the benefit, you know, she's not like she gets the management benefit package or something like that. So I'm having trouble wrapping my head around how the city manager can decide how the board spends its money.
Well, it's because the city gives her the same benefits. Like, in other words, if she was just hired straight up by the board, she would be a consultant to the board, and she wouldn't have all the city benefits. So she's eligible for pension. She's eligible for our health insurance. She's eligible for all that. So she is, I mean, you've got to always remember this. She has four bosses. I mean, I'm her boss, and then she has all the boards she reports to. So she has to manage between all of that, and I appreciate everybody working together. She's been an excellent employee as far as that's concerned. So that's why she falls to one person, which happens to be me, and I report to the city manager.
Right.
So I know it's been a hard thing for me to wrap around my head around as well.
I mean, I'm just...
Is that my letter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens if the city manager says no to a raise? What happens to our agreement to pay that money? It just doesn't happen? Does the money go somewhere else?
No. What's going to happen in your agreement, I think this is how it was written. It's written with the $46,000 in there. And at the bottom of the little spreadsheet where this is what she did with police in general, I had her put a statement on there that the boards have authorized a 2-6% increase, but it will be proposed at next budget year or something along that line. I can't remember exactly how I said it.
Right. We have authorized let's just say that we authorized it.
Yes.
Okay, just hypothetically speaking. It goes down the hall. City manager goes, I'm not giving anybody a raise. And she doesn't get the raise.
Right.
What happens to our agreement to give her this money? It just goes in smoke? Does that 2-6% go someplace else? Does it? What happens?
Yeah, it just, well, you know, we were facing a $5 million deficit.
No, I'm not arguing the politics of it. I'm just saying, what's going to happen to our money?
You won't pay it.
Okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't. No, you're not giving the money to the city. You're giving the money to the city only on what she gets paid.
Right.
Yeah, no, just because you authorized 2-6% doesn't
mean. How much does the city actually, I mean, in pension and everything else like that, what percentage of her pay does she actually get from the city?
None.
Yes,
none. It's 100% paid by the different, all the pension boards. 100%.
So then her pension benefit, her FICA, her, everything is paid by us?
Yes. So, personally, what I would recommend then from here is that you all would authorize giving her a 2-6%, which at this point you know it's already been denied. But then if you want to authorize him to write a letter in support of this, then I can use that for next budget year. That's the way I would approach it, you know, for right now. And I told Alicia that if that happens, then October 1 she would get her raise, which then next year when you're approving your services agreement, you would have to. And I guess in the future what I've learned from this is that maybe we need to talk about this and think about this when the budget process is going on, so that you can get either Sadie or Alicia in the mix.
Did a lot of people upstairs get a raise this year?
And I had 7 of them that I had adjusted their pay.
Okay, at the same time as you tried to adjust Alicia's?
No, it was prior to adjusting Alicia's. At the time when I reviewed it, I thought her pay was comparable with what my staff was being paid. I thought everything was fine. It was just that when I came to the General Employees Pension Board last quarter, the General Employees Pension Board brought it up to her, brought it up.
Okay.
And I had good concerns, and I took them into consideration, and I agreed, the 6%.
Okay, so we can, if we agree to that, we can always change it at our next meeting if we need to. If we don't agree to it, then we don't need to change it. At this time, I would like to go ahead and, so would you say authorize you to give her the raise at between a 2-6% effective next fiscal year?
Is this how this has normally been done? Or is this,
I'm sorry?
Is this how it's normally been done for her getting a raise, or is it?
It's been so long.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's, usually.
For some reason.
Usually, back in the day, you know, back when I first got on the board, me and the other pension chairman, Dale Adams, back then was a police officer, and what's his name? The general.
Arnie.
Not Arnie. This is before Arnie. What's the chairman? Stan Hansen, when Stan Hansen was the chairman. Me and Stan and Dale sat together in a room with Myron Taylor, whoever the finance director was, whoever was her boss, and then we discussed it, and we discussed among the chairman, and then that's how we granted her raises in the past. Yes?
I'm very much opposed to this.
I have a daughter who has been teaching school for 7 years. She's certified in science and math. She makes $33,000 a year, takes home $26,000. After reading the newspaper 2 weeks ago and seeing what some of the county employees make, I am very much not in favor of this. Another thing I don't like is this business of saying between 2 and 6%. If you're going to give her 6, say it. Don't say between 2 and 6%. That's ridiculous. But I would vote very strongly against doing this because of the inequity we've got in the city of Ocala between on salaries. I can't handle it.
Okay.
I would respectfully disagree, Larry, in that I don't know if basing your opinion or basing your vote on what your daughter makes should have any bearing on what other folks should make. Because we all have a choice. We all have a choice to work wherever we are most highly valued. But I appreciate, however, your concern about inequities in general. I do. I'm more concerned about the basis of the increase. You indicate because of the certification, but have there been additional responsibilities? Has she taken on the supervising additional people? That kind of thing.
Yeah. The additional responsibilities, as part of her getting the upgrade from an increase of she's on a pay grade 20 and she's going to go to a 23 is what I'm going to do in next year's budget process. At the time, back to the 2 to 6%, I'll answer them all. On the 2 to 6%, at the time, the board just brought it up cold to me. And so therefore, they wanted to give me the latitude between 2 and 6%. Now you all know that I was going to recommend 6. But anyway, because the 2 for the certification, she did get the certification, yes. Mm-hmm. So that all happened. But as we discussed, the certification reason for a raise is not part of what the city does anymore. So therefore, why did I go more because of that? Well, then I looked at her job description, and when I looked at her job description, yes, she is doing a tremendous amount more than what she was doing. And that's the reason that when HR evaluated her job description, they came back and said, yes, she belongs on a 23. So we compared her to other cities in the area that do pensions, etc. And then some of her job duties were like review, and now it's like she's the main person that does that job. So, she is supervising Sadie, which at the time she was working in conjunction with the lady out at HR. Wasn't really supervising her, they were just working together. Now she is, she's not really Sadie's supervisor, but she's Sadie's trainer, I guess, is what it is. Because Sadie works under payroll. She's payroll pension.
But we pay 50% of yes. Sadie's salary also, in addition to Alicia's, we pay 50% of Sadie's salary. Because she's working, especially now at fiscal year end, Alicia has to come up with, as Dave was going through all these investment management fees and all that stuff, she has to get with the custodians and all the managers and separate all this stuff. She's the one that submits most of the information to the actuary, so the actuary can do his actuarial report. And
she does everything with deciphering the actuarial report and putting it into our CAFR, which is our annual financial statement.
Right.
So that's all another part of her duties as well.
Right. It would have been helpful to have some information prior to the meeting so that I could have taken a look at it and could have formulated questions and would have known that as compared to other people in the area who are doing the same job, she's underpaid by an average of this amount rather than just hearing it anecdotally and trying to make a decision.
Okay, well, we don't even have to,
Yeah, there's plenty of time.
Do we
now,
have
really?
To take action? We don't have to take action on this because
it's already been denied, is what you're saying.
Yes, it has for this fiscal year.
We're in essence voting on something that's already been said no to. When does, for the next cycle, when would you need to start working on it?
Yeah, it's probably going to come out in January.
Well, we should probably think about it this quarter.
I hate to, looking at other things, I understand what you're saying, but then again, next meeting's in February, and you're saying think about it, wait a minute, now suddenly in February you vote on it, you're like, well, that was great, but...
Yeah.
At our next meeting, we should vote on this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that might be a good, if as long as,
yes.
If we vote on it in February,
that's an appropriate amount of time for you to put it in. You know, I hate to go through that, and she just gets tossed off another year.
I'll tell you what I'll do. If I get the instructions prior to your February meeting, then I'll be getting with the chairmen and seeing what they want me to do. And then we'll go with that. Because that sounded like an excellent idea, what you all were doing in the past. You were meeting amongst the chairmen to decide. And then once it gets to your agreement side, and you're agreeing not to pay it, or to pay it.
Yeah, I also agree. I don't necessarily think that we should look at other people's paying up. It's been 7 years since I got a 6% raise, and I couldn't tell you the last time I got a raise. It's been a lot.
Yeah.
So, I think it would be unfair on my part to go, I haven't gotten a raise. Heck with it, it was literally 7 years ago the last time I got a 6% raise, because that's when I became a driver.
But if somebody in your shop went from being a firefighter to being,
I don't disagree with her. I don't disagree with her getting a raise. If she's increased her education, she's increasing her responsibility, then you increase, that's what you do. But if we do have time so that Astrida can take a little time, take a little notice out of it, and we don't suddenly miss deadlines on the budgeting process and then do her wrong another year.
Yes.
Then, okay, let's put it on the agenda for February. Let's put something together, get it to us.
And we'll
soon.
Do some comparisons. And
so that way, we can all make a decision, but she still will get her raise, presuming we agree to it.
You don't mind giving me like a week at least before your agenda's due, remind me like a week before your agenda's due.
She works all week at graded papers.
My mother's taught Catholic schools for 20 some odd years, so her pay raise is behind the county contract.
You don't
want to
go that way.
So yeah, I'm getting to what you're saying.
Alright, so...
She's very dedicated to it, does a good job. She started a dance class down there. She's teaching kids how to do Greek dancing.
I'd like to make a motion to agree to the letter from the Diane Richard CFO. I keep getting these
CFOs, right? CFO. ACM, but CFO is fine.
And then where the board's going to have a final vote on it anyway. So I would like to, because it's already set in motion with the police board and the general board, we can go ahead and approve the letter, and then, but there will be no raise granted without board's approval.
I'd like to wait until February.
Okay. All right.
So
then
you need to
I withdraw my motion.
So you need to
I can't make a motion on the chairman, so we'll just wait until February. Now that, the only thing, they also apparently, or the city's attorney has made some changes in our administrative agreement that we agreed to before. And they gave me I just got this new administrative agreement with the changes, but it doesn't say where the changes are or what the changes were. So again, on the same lines as Astrida was doing with the last one, let's wait. I want to see, what the lined out changes in the new
track
language.
Changes. It's called track changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I call it shenanigans.
And then I would probably have no problem with it.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know who you got that, but you have to talk to Alicia. I'm sure she sent it to you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry for the inconvenience.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't see any, this looks like the official because it's already signed by the attorney. And we need to see what the changes were, and probably run it by our attorney just to make sure he's okay with it. And otherwise, I don't see any problems with that.
Okay.
On the minutes, who made the motion and who... Other general business. Does anyone school? So is there school coming up in
February 2-5 in Jacksonville?
Yes.
Yeah, PPTA is in Jacksonville, February...
Can I miss a second?
Yep.
I didn't give it to you. This is the minutes here. It was the accounts payment.
There you go.
Okay. That's the PPTA school, okay? I just went to the state school down in Orlando. It was similar to the one we went to in May. And we also have the Klausner conferences coming up as well in March. So we have an FPPTA in Jacksonville and then the Klausner conference, which is coming up. And,
do we know when that is in March? Do we know about when that is in March?
I believe it's the beginning.
As long as it's not near the last weekend.
Randy, what's a winner, Jacksonville?
Yeah, Estrada, do you remember when it is? Did you get any information?
I haven't gotten any information on it yet. I don't think.
What's the weather is going to be? I was like,
the cold is Jacksonville.
There's usually golf front coming through every conference.
I'll send it out. I'll email you the information.
As long as it's not last weekend in March, I'm probably pretty...
I am pretty sure it's not. I think it's the first. Okay. It's at the beginning of March.
Do we know any deadlines for the training in February?
No, there are no deadlines, but the sooner you...
Right, well, I got to run by the boss. Yeah. So that one I want to go to because it looks like I can actually skip town that period. I just need to approve it with Chief.
The sooner the better because what happens is if we wait too long, then we don't get to stay at the host hotel and you're driving, you know,
either across the street
or a mile down the road to get to the conference instead of going up the elevator. You're going to your car and down the street.
Right.
So
it's best. Conferences have all been filling out...
At PPTA, yes, with all the activity going on with pensions, they've been highly attended.
Yeah, I've been waiting for a couple of yearly calendars to kind of all come into place. And
when do you want to know? When do you want to know if we want to go?
As soon as possible. I'll send
Count
you.
Me in.
I'm sorry.
Count me in.
For the Klausner conference or the FPPTA?
Both of them.
Okay.
I'm going to Klausner.
Okay.
Because that's the beginning of March, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to conflict with... The other one's in what, February?
February 2nd to 5th.
Okay.
That was first week of February. I'll email Alicia. Is that the contact?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll email her very soon. I just haven't put me and my wife's and the rest of the school's calendars all together.
All right. We'll let you know when the schools are coming up and what's going on with all of those. Other than that, does anyone else have any other questions? Yes.
Just as a follow-up, I can answer the question that was on the table on expenses. In the 2012 actuarial valuation report, okay, they calculate the expense ratio. So they had investment expenses, and I just checked their math, at 25 basis points. So that's the operating... operating expense ratio to manage the plan. If I'm not mistaken, the average expense ratio for a plan this size is usually around 65-70 basis points, and this one is so low because such a huge proportion of the assets are indexed. So that's really low.
And 25 basis points times the 35 million, is that right? No, not quite, because not all of it's invested.
Dollars and cents, where does it come out?
In dollars, for 2012, the actuary had investment expenses of $78,993. So that's the number based on the actuary's calculation.
$78,000.
Yeah. That is low. Yeah. I say not to use that number. I mean, we all talk about what's a better way. Is it better to use the basis points number or the 78,000. I just, 78,000, you look at, depending on what office this goes into and, oh my gosh, we're spending $78,000 of taxpayers. Well, yeah, but you're spending 25 basis points, what's a better way to interpret this number?
I think the correct representation, to answer it another way, the correct representation is on a basis points schedule because hopefully the assets grow from investments. Mm-hmm. So obviously this year, the investment expense is going to be higher just by virtue of the fact you've got $5 million more in assets.
Yeah, the actual dollar amount is going to be, like FRS, you could say, holy smokes, look at their spending, but they're huge.
Right, but the fee is constant, and so it should be correctly expressed as a percentage.
Okay, so we should look at it from basis points.
Right. And to add to that, you've got 13.39, right? Wasn't that your gross for the year? percentage, and then your net was 13.09, which is not 25 basis, it's 30 basis points, right? So the 25 basis points is only on a portion of the investments that we had, right?
Well, in 2012, that 25 basis points is on everything. Okay, so it's going to be different. It's going to be higher this year. The ratio
will be higher this year,
because the plan added a couple of higher cost investment management strategies.
Okay.
So the percentage will be a little bit higher.
So when you reported to us gross and net, the cost for us then was 30 basis points, right? On that one page you showed us today.
Yeah, it should come out about the same as what the actuary is calculating.
And 78,000, 80,000 is 10% of the income. Okay, I got my number. I just got my reference.
Okay.
Would it be appropriate then also just to say, I mean, just to use that number, let's look at, you know, you get some numbers from other plans that are about our size, other plans that are bigger, plans that are smaller.
And that's what he said. Typically, it's closer to 65 basis points.
Yeah.
He says we're around 25 basis points. So I think this board.
It's a good question, but I can hear this question go into a decision maker's desk. And if we don't give that person a reference, and they go 30 basis points, well, what does that mean? What is you know, to look at it and then go, holy smokes, we are running clean. When it's typically, what'd you say,
65 basis points.
Wow, we're running at half the basis points and only runs that. Okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Where they may, in their own personal account, I don't know, maybe they're running at 20 some odd basis points, and they're using the wrong yardstick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I presume this is going to get passed to somebody's desk.
No, it was for my information.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, what I was concerned about was if somebody picked up your report and saw the $771,000 of income, that's great.
Yeah.
But I was afraid they wouldn't have the full disclosure of it. You know, they would be missing the fact that it cost us such and such. No, I'm not passing it anywhere.
Well,
I'm not passing it.
Right.
No, I just needed to know if I get asked the question. Now I'm fully informed.
Okay. Good.
Again, on that note, normal is 65 basis points. This board is doing it at 25 basis points. I think this board should be proud, and we should hold our heads high that we're adding that much value to this plan, and that much value to indirectly goes back to the participants and goes back to the savings for the city, and savings for the city helps the participants, and that's what we're here to do. As fiduciaries to the plan. Okay, under other general business, is there anything else? Seeing, hearing nothing else, it is 2:43 and the meeting is adjourned.
Wow.
I did say about the change in the meeting times, right?
Hey, Larry.
Second Tuesday.
Is it still going to be in the afternoon? No, it's going to be at 9 o'clock.
It's going to be in the morning?
Okay.
Let me hang on.